Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela, powerless over people, places, and things, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm also a double winner, but this is not my story today. Just want to make conscious contact with my higher power to help me find the right words. I've never spoken in front of so many people, and I was a bit nervous this morning. So I talked with a fellow, and she told me, 400 people, talking to a sponsor is more scary. And I thought, that is so true, especially to my sponsor. So before I joined the program, Al-Anon, my best friends had a nickname for me. They called me Our Mother Therese. I just hope the real Mother Therese wasn't as resentful as I was while taking care and saving all those people. I've grown up in a dysfunctional alcoholic family. My father was and still is to this day a heavy drinker. And I have 5 siblings, so we were 6 kids, really just 1 year separate from each other, really close. My brothers are twins. However, the center of attention in our family was my dad. He was acting out constantly. And we were trying everything to make him stop drinking. Begging, threatening, blackmailing. If only you loved us, you would stop drinking. He didn't stop. So as a child, I internalized, my dad doesn't love me. That's why he doesn't stop drinking. Little did I know that love cannot cure alcoholism. And you know, if only, this state of if only became our life. I remember my brother as a little boy, he wrote my dad a 10-page letter. It was heartbreaking. Please, Dad, stop drinking. So finally, Mom can be happy, and we can be happy, and we can be a normal family. But he never stopped. And that if only. And in the program, you know, in the rooms of Al-Anon, we have this leaflet for newcomers where it says, we can find contentment and even happiness, whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. We were far away from that. So my thinking, and that if only, I carry that throughout my life with me, you know. If only I had another job, if only I had another partner, if only this person would act differently, then I could finally be happy. So what I had internalized as a child was that I needed to cheer my parents up, I needed to try to figure out what they need, and I became Mom's little helper. I was the one running after my dad, asking him to stop drinking just for today. Please don't get as drunk as you were yesterday. We have the school thing coming up. We have this whatever family event coming up. We just don't want it to end in another fist fight with your uncle who's also an alcoholic, but you hate your guts. And guess what? It never worked. And I learned in the program that insanity is trying the same thing again and again, expecting different results. So again, I developed an addiction to fix and to be needed. And I learned how to take care of everyone but myself, to repress my feeling and my needs and much of my personality. And I was completely, completely focused on other people and on the outside. Fast forward, I did quite well on the outside. I was an overachiever. Well, I knew how to work hard and to put on a mask. However good it looked on the outside, I felt a real spiritual wound inside me, a real emptiness. So what I did with it is I externalized my helping syndrome to the whole world. I was obsessed with every humanitarian and political crisis in the world and what was going on and who was to blame for it and the news and blah, blah, blah. And I was really angry and resentful at that. And with all that going on, I couldn't identify what was going on with me and what I was feeling. Again, the symptoms of alcoholism, anger, anxiety, obsession. So in the final years of my studies, I finally decided to save the world. I went to a humanitarian crisis on another continent, worked for an NGO, and it was horrible. It was absolutely traumatizing. People were drowning in the sea, trying to reach the other shore. There was a lot of violence. It was heartbreaking, and I couldn't take it. But of course, I didn't share with anyone what was going on with me. I just did what I knew how to do, tried harder, fix and save. In no time, I decided the NGO wasn't doing nearly enough. So I started saving people. I started paying people's rent, paying people's food. And I got involved in real crazy stuff. I even paid human traffickers at one point. It didn't work out. I hope no one from the police is here. Anyways, it didn't work out in the end, luckily. However, I was really, I brought myself into real dangerous situations, but I wasn't scared. The only fear I had was to admit that I was powerless, but I couldn't do it at this point. That's what I was scared of. So it went on, the insanity went on, and you know, there was something really familiar in that, the adrenaline rush, like feeling alive in the midst of the crisis, that was really familiar to me. So one day, I was introduced to someone who had it really, really hard. He had just gotten out of prison, he was jobless, and he was homeless. And again, he was put in prison. Of course, he was totally innocent because he didn't have no papers to stay in this country. So he told me his whole story really, real, in a real charming way. And he was a real charming, by the way. And I was overwhelmed by a very strong feeling, which I thought was love. Later on in Al-Anon, I learned that we confuse love with pity. And I remember that day, like it was like a spiritual awakening in a sick way. I decided to turn to his higher power. I can save you. I got this. So we fell in love. We spent some weeks together. I was his saving queen. Boy, was I on that pedestal. However, I needed to go back to my home country, and he was still there, between a rock and a hard place. So I thought, you know, what's best for him, what we need to do to get him out of this situation, we need to get married. So, you know, making choices, I mean, making decisions is something I learned in Al-Anon, how to make an informed decision. I was making decisions out of fear, out of course, what I thought was best for other people, knee-jerk reactions, and a lot of urgencies, and yeah, anyway, this is what we did. He was very willing to get married. We got married. I decided I can't stay in Germany because he doesn't speak German, he will never learn it, blah, blah, blah. I need to move to Belgium because at least he speaks French, and there, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I moved to Belgium. He came, and we didn't exactly live happily ever after, otherwise I wouldn't be here today. So I still had on my savior cap. I was taking care of everything. He didn't find a job. It was not as we had expected. There was, you know, I escaped with work. I just escaped. I was really unhappy. He was very unhappy. How dare he be unhappy after everything I did for him, you know? And so I remembered, there was one moment as a child I remembered my mom felt a little better because I knew every day how everyone was feeling. I was taking the temperature in those rooms. And it was when she had joined the fellowship of Al-Anon only for a few months. But I somehow, and there was always this little book, Courage to Change, in our bathroom, and I still remember that. My father hated it. And I looked it up, and I'm so grateful, you know. I mean, at that point I found God, the gift of desperation. That was the God I found at the time, and I quit playing God. So I went to Al-Anon Brussels, and what I had seen there, I had not seen anywhere else. People were sharing painful experiences, painful feelings, but they were still hopeful and even joyful. And, you know, I could feel so emotional about something and hear someone else share about it, and I get a totally different perspective. So that was really mind-blowing to me. I felt a little better, but as so often, before things get better, they will get worse. So my husband finally found a job after I stopped writing his application and so on, when he started doing it himself. he finally found a job, but I mean, he was clearly exploited, and he was not paid on time, and I decided all that, that this was a bad job. And he called me once from his job, and he said, look, they're still not paying me, blah, 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 if this is going on. And I said, wait, I'll be there. I put on my sailor cap, I went to his job, and I quit his job for him. Not only that, I went to the police before I quit his job. I went to the police and I said, I want to sue this employer. They're exploiting my husband, and this is against the law in this country. And you know, this policewoman, like, sometimes you have these guards with skin on. She was telling me, like, okay, fair enough, but you cannot quit. I mean, you cannot sue the employer of your husband. Your husband needs to do it himself. Like, what the fuck? So I went there and I did it, and it was not a nice scene. They gave him all the money they owned, and they just said, don't come back with this woman. And there were clients and customers, and it was messy. So I went to the rooms the next day. I kind of thought it was a crazy thing, but I just thought it's what I needed to do. I shared it in a meeting, and people were laughing, and you know, fellows were asking me after the meeting, like, why didn't you call someone? And I can call someone before making a decision like that? It didn't occur to me. So, and then my future sponsor came to me after that meeting. She said, why didn't you call your sponsor? I said, I don't have a sponsor. And she said, why don't you have a sponsor? And I don't have a sponsor. Why don't, and then it dawned on me, it's a real window of opportunity. And I asked her if she wanted to be my sponsor. And she said yes, and for days I felt I was second guessing her. I said, oh, this woman, she probably can't say no. You know, she, I mean, insanity, that was my way of living, second guessing everyone, including myself. I was sure she couldn't put boundaries, maybe, you know, why would she, I'm such a burden, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the first months of calling my sponsor, I mean, it started to be the first intimate relationship of my life that I had with my sponsor. And I need to call her every day. That's what we do in Al-Anon. The sentence that she told me most often in the first months was, "That's none of your business." You know? She asked me how I was feeling, and I said, "Well, my husband is—he's angry today, and my colleague looks weird, plotting against me, and my family—that is going on, like." Really, I didn't know where I ended, where other people started. It was all enmeshed. So I learned what is my business and what I need to take care of and what is my side of the street. And most importantly also for me, I learned how to quit the debating society. And today is one of the biggest blessings of the program for me is that I'm less and less interested in my own opinions. As a matter of fact, very often I don't have an opinion. What a luxury, you know? People, especially in my family, where everyone is so opinionated, and we meet each other, we haven't seen each other for a year, and then we discuss politics, and we get so upset that we yell at each other, and I'm like, I just don't have an opinion. So I started working the steps, and I started making my amends. My dad was on there too, although I told my sponsor, I don't care about my dad. But she said, why is he all over your fourth step then? Why is he all over your resentments? And I remember, without the program, I blamed my dad for everything, for my relationship with men, for everything that was not working in my life. Because boy, I read all the psychology books there are, so I knew that is childhood and that is alcoholism and blah, blah, blah. So I worked through that. I worked through these resentments, and I called him to make my amends. We hadn't spoken in years. I called him. At first, he didn't recognize me. He said, who are you? I need to tell him which daughter I am of his many daughters. And then I told him, can we meet to talk? And he said, I'm not interested. And he hung up the phone on me. And you know, I mean, without the program, I didn't take it personally. I learned in Al-Anon not to take things personally. And it was a real blessing. And I prayed and I handed it over and I said, you know, only because I'm ready to talk, he doesn't need to talk. And miracles are happening. He called me back a few later. We even met at a petrol station shortly, but that's another story. And he apologized. He apologized for hanging up on me. And I Yeah, it's one area where I have really admitted my powerlessness. It's my father's drinking and it's his physical decline. And I don't know, and he even, you know, I see him once or twice a year. It also really depends a lot on my spiritual condition because I cannot always take it and I don't need to. And I keep it rather short. And even, you know, the last time we met, he told me after 40 years of heavy drinking and really physical decline, he can barely walk, he's losing his teeth. He told me, I might have a drinking problem. And I, who am I to judge? Really? So that's real freedom, and that's a real miracle that Al-Anon has brought to my life. And I, well, going back to my marriage, I was, we were really both not happy, and I told my sponsor, I need to figure out what I'm going to do. I need to know if I have to divorce and so on. And my sponsor said, work the steps first. And I didn't get it, you know. Still, there was this real urgency in my life, this problem. I need to figure out how can I focus on the steps first. But yeah, I was working the steps and it became clear to me. And it became clear to me that at this point, my only motivation to stay in this marriage was because I thought he couldn't live without me. I was still saving him. And that was a real painful decision to make. Also, yeah, when you stop people pleasing, people aren't pleased, obviously. And my husband was real angry. He really didn't want to separate. And at some point, I got him at least to leave the apartment, because in order to separate, you have to live apart. And he didn't want to move out. However, at least he was moving in with friends, so he wasn't there physically, but he didn't want to leave this address. So at one point, and I'm not proud of it, but it was the best I could do at the time, was I changed the door locks in his absence. I moved out, I got another tenant in from the landlord, and I put a real physical boundary, and it was really, really hard because I was still worried sick about him. Because also I forgot something I set him so many deadlines to finally move out, he didn't. And when the last of the last deadlines, he told me something horrible had happened, he had lost all his savings, he cannot go anywhere. So I knew now it's really, really time to put that boundary, and I did it with the help of the program and with the help of my fellows. And I really want to also talk about fellowship in the program. Like, I knew for sure, when I didn't know which way to go, I was carried. I was carried by my friends in the program, and that's the real, you know, like what we had together as fellows is all the things I was lacking growing up with alcoholism. Joy, harmony, serenity, humor, all those things that you don't have growing up with alcoholism, that I did not know growing up. So fast forward, my ex-husband is living his best life today. We are still friends. I made my amends to him. We meet each other twice per year, so have a short coffee. And I'm really happy for him, you know, and we have overcome this. And there's also some, yeah, and I made my amends to him because I clearly was not present in his marriage. And I know today how to take care of myself and how to stop taking care of other people's business. I know today that pity is a huge trigger for me. If I feel pity for you, I better run for the hills, because the next thing I'm going to do is I tell you how you to run your life, and of course you don't do it correctly, and then I will run it for you. So, and it's also, I have learned in Al-Anon, pity is the opposite of respect. You know, I pitied my parents as a child. I really pitied them, and it broke my heart. But it's looking down at people. And today, I don't have to do that anymore. And so, yeah, life went on. I got in a new relationship. I got a promotion in my job. I thought I had sorted out life. I thought this is how my life is supposed to be. But what really happened is I turned all these things, the new relationship, my job, into my higher power. So I did it the other way around. And I gave my emotional security away. You know, whatever you say, here you have it. I'm just trying to be perfect for you. And I found that out again with the help of the program. I had again the symptoms of alcoholism, anger, anxiety, obsession. And I know today that as long as I'm obsessing, I am not open for my higher power's will. And when I think about it first thing in the morning and last thing before I go to bed, it's obsession. I haven't prayed. I didn't use my tools. So, yeah, it's humility also, and it's acknowledging the fact that I don't see the bigger picture. I don't know how my life's supposed to be. I'm not in charge of the outcome. All I can do is the footwork and get more and more information about myself. And it might look totally different from what I had anticipated it to be or from what I thought it will look like. But I know today that whatever happens, I don't need to face it without the help of Al-Anon. And the closer I stick to my program, the more I will be happy, joyous, and free. And I like that story when they asked Michelangelo how he did his biggest sculpture, how he was managing to do it, you know. And he said, "I took a hammer and a chisel and I chipped away everything that didn't look like David." And I thought, that's great. So I'm trying to do that today, chipping away everything that doesn't look like Angela. Thank you very much.